From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio left dozens dead this weekend, and there were multiple mass shootings last weekend. One at the Gilroy Garlic Festival in California garnered days of national coverage. Another at the Brownsville Old Timers Day block party in Brooklyn barely registered. These tragedies have become an all too frequent part of the news, forcing those of us in the media to wrestle with the fact that what we choose to cover and how we choose to cover it shapes public perceptions of these events and may even influence whether or not they continue to happen. Jason Silva is an assistant professor at William Patterson University, where he studies media coverage of mass shootings. He's analyzed 50 years of New York Times articles. Full disclosure, I spoke with Jason on Wednesday before this weekend's tragic events. Jason, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Was there one particular event that originally got you interested in studying mass shootings and how they are covered by the mass media?
Well, I would say that, like most people of my generation, I was sort of introduced to mass shootings via Columbine, which to this day has received more media coverage than any other shooting and has sort of become representative of the type of instances that are covered. So I would say that that is sort of set the precedence for my interest, especially in present day.
Your doctoral thesis work was this analysis of 50 years of shootings and the media coverage of them, specifically in the New York Times. But I'm curious how you even compiled that data. I mean, my understanding is there are multiple databases of mass shootings, but there is no one comprehensive authoritative database of mass shootings.
Right. So that's one of the big issues that we have. The FBI doesn't necessarily have a mass shooting definition. They have this mass killing definition. All of their reports are about active shooters, which doesn't necessarily care about how many people were killed or injured, which has its own positives. But as we're trying to accumulate these mass shooting databases, we often think about primarily the motivation and the number of victims that are killed. So with the Gilroy shooting, that would be considered a mass shooting because three people were killed, which is normally the cutoff point. Some people use four. And it seems that he did not have any sort of gang-related or crime-related or state-sponsored motivations, as opposed to when you look at something like you brought up the Brooklyn shooting, that was motivated, we believe, by some sort of gang dispute, and then this would therefore not be considered a mass shooting in many of the definitions.
So when you look at the data that you have amassed over 50 years of shootings, what are some of the commonalities or trends that you tend to see?
I think one thing that we need to bring up is that it's overwhelmingly male. And this is something that's been predominantly neglected, and we've been looking at recently this idea of toxic masculinity and aggressive men and what is motivating them to do this.
So when you say it's overwhelmingly male, you mean the shooters are overwhelmingly men?
The shooters are overwhelmingly male, yes. And this has sort of received more attention in the aftermath of like the incel movement that's gotten a lot of attention and the shooting at Isla Vista, California, the member of the incel movement. When we think about the incidences themselves, we find that a lot of coverage is dedicated to school shooters and a lot is dedicated to ideologically motivated perpetrators. However, with my research, we're finding that the reality is it's actually more often occurring in the workplace or in these sort of open spaces, as was the case with the Gilroy shooting.
So, Jason Silva, your interest is in how the media covers it. And you've already noted, right, that certain types of shootings have tended to get more coverage than others. Your analysis looked specifically at the New York Times. And I wonder how representative you think that is in our increasingly fractured media landscape. There's a lot of diversity in what is covered and how it's covered.
Sure. So that's been one of the issues, right? How do we sort of change media analyses over this changing landscape? But we still find that the New York Times is representative of general media at large. So when we look at, for example, what's highlighted in Twitter, we're oftentimes seeing people drawing from information that was originally obtained from the New York Times. So similar to historically, we found that other newspapers were drawing their information that aligned not necessarily with the ideologies of what the New York Times represents, but more just the amount of coverage dedicated to a certain subject matter. So we're finding the same thing right now, right? One of the issues that we were suggesting is that the Gilroy shooting is receiving a lot more coverage than perhaps the Brooklyn shooting. Now, we're not saying anything about the information within these different media outlets, right? But we're finding the same amount of attention is dedicated either in the New York Times or in a more conservative news source.
And if you look across mass media as a whole, you've already mentioned that different types of shootings tend to garner more coverage. But if we look overall, what fraction of mass shootings get covered, period?
We find that about 75% of mass shootings get covered, but there's a huge difference in the amount of coverage. The average shooting only receives about 4 or 5 New York Times articles. And then there's these few high-profile events that receive extensive, enormous levels of coverage. So in our research, we found that Columbine, for example, the most covered one, has received over 500 articles at this point. So this is sort of what's setting the American mindset and our framework for what represents a mass shooting. It's these few high-profile instances, and what we determine are these high-profile instances.
And Jason Silva, you have called your analysis a media distortion analysis. What is it that you think media coverage is distorting relative to the reality of mass shooting events?
So I did not invent the media distortion analysis. This is something that I had taken from colleagues, Stephen Shermock and Jeff Gruenwald, and they sort of framed it as this idea that, all right, let's highlight the reality of all these instances, and then we'll highlight, and then we'll examine the media coverage of all these instances, and we'll do a comparison. And with my research over the 50-year timeline, we found that we are dedicating a lot more coverage to school and lone wolf ideologies when the reality is that they occur in the workplace and in open spaces much more. We're also dedicating an enormous amount of coverage to rifles and these automatic, semi-automatic weapons. Now, the reality is, in fact, in mass shootings, handguns are actually used much more often. While they may not necessarily be as deadly, we're looking into that right now. Actually, we have a piece that'll be coming out shortly on that. And that's sort of representative of gun violence at large. So what we also need to consider in this media distortion is that mass shootings are really only representative of the gun violence problem, but they make up a small minority of the gun violence problem, right? Like 1% of gun violence instances, they're predominantly using handguns. 90% of crime uses handguns. So we need to think about how, yes, it's important to perhaps implement gun control strategies, if this is the way that you want to take it, surrounding AK-47s and these, you know, semi-automatic, automatic weapons. However, this also may be, to a degree, a form of symbolic legislation that would not necessarily prevent gun violence at large in the United States.
Jason Silva, one issue that those of us in the media have certainly been wrestling with in recent months and recent years is how much information to share about the perpetrators of these crimes. And we saw after the New Zealand mosque shooting, the Prime Minister of New Zealand call for news outlets not to say the shooter's name. And in fact, a new analysis has found that only about 14% of media coverage in the United States actually did release that shooter's name. In the past week, it seems to be really variable from outlet to outlet how the shooter's identity and ideology is treated. Do you feel like we're seeing changes in media attention to the shooter and also to the victims involved?
I would say this has been a huge step forward. So we in academia have been talking about this for quite a few years now. And in my research, we really sort of promoted this idea of the no notoriety campaign, as it's been oftentimes referred to, right? Let's not give the shooters attention. Let's not put their names more than once within these news sources. Let's not put their pictures on the front page. And we've actually noticed a dramatic change in the coverage of these shooters. So that's very exciting for us as academics, where oftentimes we kind of feel like we introduce this research and we have these findings and then sort of nothing happens with them. To actually see this sort of occurring is rather exciting. And you're absolutely right. I would say that the New Zealand shooting was representative of that on a global scale. However, I think it's also important to credit Parkland, who have been very vocal in terms of no notoriety and have been able to garner a lot more attention than perhaps some of the more previous mass shootings. So I think that we're seeing a tremendous change in attention to these perhaps fame-seeking shooters. So this has been very successful. But at the same time, we're still dedicating enormous amounts of attention to these mass shootings, which, as I keep noting, is not necessarily representative of gun violence at large. So if we look at something like the Brooklyn shooting, that's receiving very limited coverage and, in fact, is more representative of gun violence and perhaps the type of legislation we should be implementing to prevent gun violence in the United States.
Which comes back to this idea of media distortion, but also even at the research level, if shootings that involve gang affiliations are not even included in the databases as mass shootings, if they are not covered as mass shootings, it gives them less weight in the public eye, and that would seem to be a mistake.
Absolutely. And I think places like the Gun Violence Archive, they don't consider motivation. They just consider whether or not four or more people are killed. So that has its own value. However, with things like the mass shooting database that I work on, the reason we don't include gang violence is because a lot of times those motivations are so drastically different. The precipitating crisis events are so drastically different, and therefore the prevention strategies are so drastically different.
And of course, there's an inherent inequality in reporting on one and not another, because the image of mass shootings, as we've come to think of them, is overwhelmingly white, whereas the gang-related mass shootings are often people of color.
Right. So, and that goes back to a long line of media research, which has found that we're dedicating a lot less coverage to sort of this black-on-black crime, because in the social construction of criminality in the United States, that's considered common and not worthy of consideration, whereas we want this sort of sensational coverage to draw the public eye, and that's sort of where the mass shootings come into play. So yes, it's receiving a lot of coverage, and I think that coverage can be useful because I think that we can use it to say we have a gun violence problem, now let's enact legislation, but we need to make sure that that legislation addresses the gun violence problem at large and not just these few high-profile instances.
Jason Silva, based on your body of research, are there recommendations that you would make both to mass media for coverage of shootings and also to media consumers for, you know, how to handle or what kind of coverage to look for?
I think the current media is doing a great job with the No Notoriety campaign. So first of all, I would like to commend them on that. I think that's been a huge step forward. But I also think that within coverage reporting, even if you're dedicating an enormous amount of attention because it's drawing the eyeballs, so for example, with the Gilroy shooting, people are interested, so it's gaining a lot of attention. Within that coverage, I think it's important to note a few of these key factors that I've highlighted. So to say, yes, we're dedicating coverage to Gilroy, but this is not representative of gun violence at large, we should also take into consideration these other things. So you can use this platform of sensational coverage for creating insight into these alternative gun violence issues.
Jason Silva is assistant professor at William Patterson University. He studies trends in media coverage of mass shootings. Jason, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.